ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ, May Brahman bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. There was a great soul in South India called Ramana Maharshi. At that time, the freedom fight was going on in India to throw off the British yoke. There was a very great devotee by name Dilip Kumar Roy. He visited Ramana Maharshi and he was very much inspired by this idea of patriotism. This spiritual aspirant, Dilip Roy, had a conflict. What to do? Should I call on God or should I plunge into this freedom fight? So he went to Maharshi and put this question, is it not our duty to help in the country attain freedom? Ramana Maharshi simply sat back, smiled, and told him, first you attain freedom yourself, afterwards you will know how to help the country attain freedom. Of course, this type of advice is rejected by many people. Even Ramakrishna Mission had to go through this conflict with its own devotees. Exactly at the same time, some devotees went to the president of the Ramakrishna order at that time, Swami Shivananda. And the devotees, very close devotees, and they were very sad. Swami Shivananda asked them, why are you so sad? And the devotees, they said, we have a complaint against you. We feel that the whole world is following Mahatma Gandhiji in trying to obtain freedom for our country. But the Ramakrishna Mission doesn't seem to be doing anything by itself, nor does it seem to be encouraging any of its devotees to do. Mahapurusha Maharaj Swami Shivananda became very grave and he replied, if Swami Vivekananda was a prophet, he would have known, he would have told us what is the best thing for us to do. Do you think we will not be able to help this country? Not to speak of Swami Vivekananda, even I by myself could bring the freedom of India this very moment if I wish. But Swami Vivekananda did not ask us to do this. He said, you lead a spiritual life. That is the greatest help you can give. When we read this kind of incidents, sometimes, you know, our ignorance brings us to the fore, the questions. Is it not a little bit unreasonable? Spirituality can come later. Let us first try to help in whatever way we can. In fact, it proves to be very disastrous in some situations to give freedom before one deserves it. India itself is the case. As soon as the British people withdrew, there was tremendous amount of bloodshed, as many of you know. Same thing happened in South Africa. As soon as this apartheid ended and people got freedom, do you know what is the result now? In Cape Town alone, every week, there are more than 50 murders. And who is murdering whom? The black people are murdering the black people. Now the people there, they got freedom. There is no oppression. there is no apartheid. But are they ready for this freedom? This is the idea Swami Vivekananda wants to give us. It is the duty of each one of us to help the whole world as much as possible. And there are three types of helps: the physical or material, intellectual, and spiritual. And if we do not give the spiritual help, then it will be disastrous. You may also have the doubt, but suppose a beggar comes to you, should we not give him some food or some other help? Instead you say, my good man, take God's name, all your problems will be solved. No, that's not what is meant. What is meant is, we must not think physical help alone is the help. Same thing, more dramatically perhaps, the case of Iraq. America went to help them get rid of the dictator. What is the result of that? Bloodshed, murder. Why is it? After all, you know, America is not an unselfish country, neither UK. But what they have done is definitely a wonderful job, I have to admit it. They have helped the local people get rid of a tyrant who had killed people by thousands, hundreds of thousands, anyway. Instead of using this opportunity, they are trying to kill each other. And there are two types of people, the leaders and the followers. The followers are lambs, sheep, what the Americans call dumb. And the leaders are equally dumb, but they have got strength. Swami Vivekananda is succinctly summarizing this idea. Helping man spiritually is the highest help that can be given to him. He who gives man spiritual knowledge is the greatest benefactor of mankind. And as such, we always find that those were the most powerful men who helped man in his spiritual needs, because spirituality is the true basis of all our activities in life. The great incarnations, Christ, Buddha, and others, they did not start hospitals and schools and academic institutions and all those things. So you may again feel, then what good did they do by their spirituality? What good Sri Ramakrishna do by just being at Dakshineswar? Look at the man. He had never gone to a school. He had very rarely gone to a school. Mostly he debunked school. Even the little time that he went to school, he used to spend only in playing dramas and singing and playing truant, as you call it. He read his teachings in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. You will see that he is only talking about God realization, being spiritual, development of character. But he never mentions, in fact, there is positive statements which forbid some of his devotees either to start schools or colleges or hospitals. Many devotees misunderstand Sri Ramakrishna. Was he forbidding all these things? Was he not intelligent enough to know that the world stands in need of all these things and many more? He knows it. But he also strikes at the very root of the problem. What is the problem? If a man becomes spiritual, he would be intellectual, and he would also get all the material things, and he would be able to help anybody in any situation. That is why Sri Ramakrishna's influence, you just look at it now, there are more than 150 Ramakrishna Mission branches. There are all over the world, there are millions of followers of Sri Ramakrishna, and nobody is sitting quiet. Everybody is doing his or her best to help the society in a better way. You see, the influence of spirituality is tremendous. This is what Swami Vivekananda is telling here, that spiritual help is the highest type of help. But one thing we have to remember, or two things we have to remember, is one can give only what one has. If we are not spiritual, we cannot give. Spirituality is not something to be talked about. I remember a beautiful cartoon. A very posh hotel, and a lady, a very rich lady in fur coats, was coming out, and a tramp in a very miserable condition went up to her and said, "Me lady, I had not eaten for 3 days. Will you kindly help me?" And the lady, as soon as she heard it, tears started pouring down. "Oh, I cannot see the miseries of the world." Simply she got into the car and ran away. Most of our talking, you know, spiritually we have to help and do all those things, is like that. So Holy Mother, she used to say, "Jar ache, mapo. Jar nei, jopo." That means those who have either education or wealth, let them distribute it and help the poor. Mapo means measure out. And if they do not, they are not proper men. They are derelicting their duty. But if people do not have those things, poor people, jopo means you pray to God. Japa means you lead your spiritual life and be a good person. And a good person is an immense help in this world. Not the goody-goody fellow. There are so many useless fellows. They do not do harm because they have no capacity to harm. Swami Vivekananda once was approached by a young man, and very weak, as though, you know, even if you do, he will fly away. He said, "I want to enter into samadhi." Swami Vivekananda looked at him and said, "My boy, can you tell a lie?" And the man was aghast. "No, I can't tell a lie." "Then I am sorry, I can't help you. Go away from here." What Swami Vivekananda was advising to him was telling a lie. Was it really a spiritual help? It was, because this poor man, he is incapable of telling even a lie. He would die first, even before telling a lie, because he's so much afraid of being caught and beaten to death and all that. What I mean is, spirituality means strength in every way. Here is a most beautiful statement of Swami Vivekananda. "A spiritually strong and sound man will be strong in every other respect if he so wishes." Let us take an example. Sri Ramakrishna. Supposing he approaches Bill Gates. Imagine, you know, there is no harm in imagining these things. And says, "Sir, I am a very capable man. Would you kindly appoint me as the executive director of your company?" Can I ask you, what would be the reply of Bill Gates? He would he would not say, because how could he recognize? He would say, "This man is not doesn't even have some tails." Tails means, you know, MBBS, MD, MBA, and Oxford return and all that. Doesn't have any qualifications. So he thinks. But do you think a man who could enter into samadhi, he could not become the wealthiest man in the world and the greatest scientist and greatest in every respect? Do you think if he wishes, he would not be able to do it? Do you think a stupid person would ever become spiritual? Do you really believe it? Only the most intelligent person can become spiritual. The man with the strongest willpower alone can become really spiritual. So you see, we have so many wrong ideas about spiritual people because they do not do business, because they often bear so many difficulties. We think that they are not capable of doing all these things. No, they are the greatest man. A spiritual man, if he wishes, he could become the greatest businessman. If he wishes, he could be the greatest scientist. He could unravel the secrets of the atom far better than anyone can do it. There was an interesting statement in one of the Upanishads that one who obtains the knowledge of Brahman, he becomes an all-knowing person. So once somebody asked Swami Sharadananda, Sri Ramakrishna is such a man who knows Brahman. Does he know the secrets of atom? Swami Sharadananda said, no, he doesn't know. But if he wants to know, he can know. Sri Ramakrishna made once a statement. Hrithe, if I had known this world to be real, I would have paved your Kamarpukur with gold. Do you think it is just a egotistical outburst, or is it a truer statement? Think deeply. I know that any spiritual person can attain anything that he wants because he has the right equipment, the willpower, one singleness of purpose, and the intelligence and the common sense. So a spiritually strong and sound man will be strong in every other respect if he so wishes. But often they know that they get the highest. They need not undergo all those things. The world, for a spiritual man, this world is not that very important. There is a funny story. There was a young boy and he loved comics and he used to sit in a easy chair, whole day pass reading these comics. And his father told him many times, you must go to school and get good education. Every day he was nagging his son. So one day his son called him and said, Daddy, let us have a good talk today. Sit down. What do you want me to do? You must go to school. What will happen if I go to school? Then you will enter into a good college. What will happen? Then you will get a good degree. Then what will happen? You will get a good job. Then what will happen? You will earn a lot of money. Then what will happen? Then you can sit in an easy chair and enjoy life. He said, but Daddy, that's what I am doing now. But there is a twist to this story. Only a person who has the intelligence and the wealth, only he can afford to do it. And a spiritual man is such. The rest is laziness. One cannot enjoy without deserving. One of the most wonderful truths in life is, nobody can enjoy anything unless he deserves it. The wealthiest person, you think that he can experience more happiness just because he has got money and other things. No, my dear sir. In fact, most of these people will be suffering from dyspepsia because they are worried, they sit in the easy chair and they don't. But a poor man who doesn't have much, how much he enjoys, you can envy him. So, Swami Vivekananda used to say, a rich man can acquire the greatest number of what is called books in this world, but he would be only like a donkey carrying these books, but he would not be any better than that. I remember a cartoon, There was a rich lady and there was a very famous painter and he was exhibiting his paintings. So this rich lady was invited as a elite member of the society for the opening. So this lady went into this exhibition and it was a gorgeous place and decorated all his paintings so beautifully. Everything is artistic. So she liked particularly one roundish object which was attached to the door and said, how much does this cost? And the attendant looked at her and said, "Madam, that is not an art object, that is the doorknob." You see, a person who cannot distinguish between what is a doorknob and what is an artistic object, maybe the richest person in this world, is no good at all. So a spiritual person is one who goes through life's struggles for many lifetimes, and he develops. Even sometimes physically he may look weak, but intellectually, common sense wise, and spiritually, he is far ahead of most of the ordinary people. A spiritual person enjoys the highest felicity, the highest bliss, highest enjoyment. And if we can give any man, turn any man into this spiritual field, that would be the greatest help. So, how do we know what type of help we should give? See, Swami Vivekananda says, that help which tends to make us strong spiritually, the highest. Next to it comes intellectual help, and after that, physical help. As I mentioned earlier, if all people only give spiritual help, then what about intellectual? Should not some people educate others? Should not some people open free food giving charities and all those? Yes, there will be always people who do those things. But even those people will be inspired only by spiritual people. You can always see, if any person feels like helping anybody else, either physically or intellectually or in any wise, he would be always inspired by a higher ideal, and that higher ideal is no less than a spiritual ideal. Swami Vivekananda tells us, the miseries of the world cannot be cured by physical help only. Until man's nature changes, these physical needs will always arise and miseries will always be felt, and no amount of physical help will cure them completely. The only solution of this problem is to make mankind pure. There is no end for the miseries of the people. Why? Because there is no end for the desire of the people. Now, this modern age is one of the most exemplary ages. We have sufficient knowledge to make everyone on this earth happy. We have sufficient food, sufficient technology to help other people be happy. Has anyone the courage to get up and say the world today is happier, even a little bit, than what it was 50 years back or even 100 years back? Would anybody dare to say that? What is the cause? What is the reason? The misery, on the other hand, seems as though it has increased. Previously, of course, always it is a delusion, as though the world is gold. Olden times, you know, how wonderful the birds are singing and there is less noise and the people had enough time. This is all bunkish idea. The world had always been in the same way. It has neither been too happy nor too unhappy. Only circumstances have changed. But what has changed is, we have sufficient knowledge, technology, to make ourselves happy. But we do not have that motivation to make ourselves happy. Why? Because we are ignoring the most important, single most important factor that can bring us happiness. What is it that can help us really be happy? Recognition of our own true nature. That is called spirituality. If I am not spiritual, nothing can make me really happy. It can give me some pleasure, yes, there is no doubt about it. But then we must always remember, pleasure always comes with a crown of misery on its head. Always. I see in front of my eyes every day these examples. A couple get married and they seem to be, you know, just descended from heaven. They are so in love, so much in love with each other. and they seem to be very anxious to help each other, to love each other, to sacrifice for each other. And a few years pass by, and then differences of opinion, children are disobedient, and this and that and so many things. It's a mass of misery. So such people sometimes come and say, "Oh Swamiji, how we wish that we are in your seat." I said, "Don't aspire for my seat. Only it is my seat. I am not going to give it up." Why did you not also think about it before marriage? What is the use of thinking after so much of water has passed down the bridge? The point is, nobody's life is bad really. We are all like people traveling in the same boat, only maybe I have entered the boat first and secured the best seat. And you have entered a little bit late, so you have to sit behind the crowd. So like that, every one of us are going towards God. Every one of us, we have to go through these experiences to learn the lessons. So Swami Vivekananda is telling, before you start out to help anyone, let your character be well established. When character is well established, then man gets to truth. Such a man is safe forever. He cannot do any evil. You may place him in any company. There will be no danger for him. But development of character, Swami Vivekananda points out to us, is only a lower state of evolution. You may be the best person in the world. You may appear to be very unselfish. You may be helping other people. You may be a very truthful person. Everybody respects you in this world as a man of character. But that is not the goal of Karma Yoga. There is a higher state still than having this good tendency, good character. What is that? That is the desire for liberation. You must remember that freedom of the soul is the goal of all yogas, and each one equally leads to the same result. There are four yogas: the devotional path, the path of meditation, the path of knowledge, and the path of selfless action. All these paths, they have only one goal, is to liberate the soul from bondage. And what is the bondage? Bondage, where do you see the bondage? Our body is a bondage. Our mind is a bondage. Our thoughts are our bondage. The whole world is a bondage. What is bondage? It will not allow you to do what you want to do. Have you never wished to fly into the sky like a bird? Have you ever seen a kite as though it is flying without any care in this world? Have you not ever dreamed of being able to fly like that? But you cannot do it. Why should you take all the trouble, you know, you put petrol in your car, you sit there, you start there, it doesn't start, and your wife comes and pushes your car and it pushes you also out. Have you not wished that you just, I am in the Vedanta center, and you are in the Vedanta center. What a wonderful freedom it is. But this body, this mind, this world will not allow you to do it. That's a fact of the bondage. So what is the greatest bondage? Attachment. It's not having things. You can have a body. You can have a wife. You can have, in fact, more than one wife. Sri Krishna, the greatest incarnation of God, Hindus consider him as Purna Avatar. He is the perfect incarnation, greatest incarnation in the world. So one Christian missionary went and asked one of our Swamis, "Swami, do you really feel Sri Krishna is an incarnation of God?" Swami said, "Of course, we consider him." He said, "You know, what kind of man is he? Married 16,108 wives, and you still consider him as an incarnation of God?" Swami said, "Yes, of course. How many wives have you?" The missionary said, "Only one." "Is she happy?" said, "Swami, what shall I say? I am struggling to make her happy, but always she is grumbling. See, 16,108 wives, perfectly happy. If this man is not an incarnation of God, who else could be an incarnation of God?" Krishna is called Purna Brahmachari, man who observed perfect continence. You may be surprised. How can a man who is married 16,108 wives and had so many children, how could you consider him as a brahmachari? You know, there is a beautiful meaning to this word brahmachari. One who lives and moves in Brahman is called brahmachari. Not one who is simply like, as we say, in India, we give up certain bull calves in sacrifice. You know, they will be roaming all over the villages, eating everybody's vegetable garden and all that. There are so many eunuchs in this world. Do you mean to say they are observing continence? No, a man who is perfectly unattached, he is a real brahmachari. True detachment comes because he knows the truth. He knows God. He has realized God. Swami Vivekananda, you know, he loved ice cream. And there are so many unintelligent devotees. Doubts crop up in their minds. How could a man who is so much attached to ice cream be considered as a great man of knowledge? Do you think your Swami Vivekananda would care anything for ice cream? This is a play. He could give up his body at his will. He could give up anything. No, this is just, you know, it is a way of acting. Leela, we call it in this world. Sri Ramakrishna used to love jalebis. Do you think he was attached to jalebis? What does he care for these paltry things? They are of insignificance. But they seem to be attached. Krishna seems to be loving gopis. Sri Ramakrishna used to weep when Narendra was not coming. And people used to wonder, "Oh, this man is so much attached to this boy." No, my dear sir. That's not attachment. That is a true love. If Narendra doesn't come, what does it matter to Sri Ramakrishna? He would be happier people. Therefore, Swami Vivekananda says, be unattached. Let things work. Let brain centers work. Work incessantly, but let not a ripple conquer the mind. A most beautiful idea he gives here. Work as if you were a stranger in this land. Work incessantly, but do not bind yourselves. Bondage is terrible. This world is not our habitation. It is only one of the many stages through which we are passing. This is one of the dominant themes in spiritual life, which every great spiritual person reminds us. This world is not our world. We do not belong to it. The world doesn't belong to us. We are just as though pilgrims. John, you remember the Pilgrim's Progress, John Bunyan's? Pilgrim's Progress. We are all pilgrims. We have come, as it were, to a strange land. We have some work there, some duties there. We have to finish. Once we have finished, we go up. When Swami Vivekananda, at that time Narendranath, met Sri Ramakrishna for the first time, and he was a wonderful singer, he sang two beautiful songs. One of them was, "Mano chalo nijani ketane." Oh mind, let us go to our own home. What are you doing here, roaming in a foreign land, in foreign dress? This is not a song, this is not a poetic expression, this is the truth. One day or the other, all of us have to go, and nothing goes with us, and we do not go with anyone. We have come alone, we go alone. Then why are we here? There is a purpose. What is that purpose? So Swami Vivekananda says, remember that great saying of the Sankhya philosophy. The whole of nature is for the soul, not the soul for nature. The very reason of nature's existence is for the education of the soul. It has no other meaning. It is there because the soul must have knowledge, and through knowledge free itself. If we remember this always, we shall never be attached to nature. What a marvelous statement. Why are we here? To educate ourselves, to acquire knowledge. In the very beginning he makes the statement in this first chapter of Karma Yoga. The goal of Karma Yoga is knowledge. What knowledge? Not intellectual knowledge, not medical knowledge, not technical knowledge. Nature of ourselves, true nature of ourselves, God realization, self-knowledge. What can this nature teach us? It teaches us many lessons. One of the greatest lessons this world, this life has to teach us is detachment. You know, just look back and see, you learn always, you go through so many situations, you get attached and you suffer and you come out, then you learn to stand detached. That is the ultimate lesson. You come alone and you go alone. Nobody belongs to you, you do not belong to anybody. Everything in this world, it doesn't belong to you. Nothing belongs to us. The great saint Kabir Das used to say, O Kabira, when you were born, you were seen weeping and everybody else laughed because of the joy, we have got a son. But when you die in such a manner that you go out laughing, but the whole world weeps. Ah, what a loss. This man's death is a great loss for us. We will never get such a person again. Only when a saint passes away, the whole world weeps. So the reason of nature's existence is for education of the soul. And what does that education do? It brings us knowledge. Knowledge makes us free. Thou shalt know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That is true knowledge. The whole gist of this teaching is that you should work like a master and not as a slave. Work incessantly, but do not do slaves' work. We are all slaves. Do you not see how everybody works? Nobody can be altogether at rest at any time. Tell me, at what time in your life are you resting? Do you think you ever rest at any time? Waking state, your mind is working furiously, your body is working. Dream state, your mind is working, it is conjuring up magical dreams, and your body is also working furiously. When you are in deep sleep, your mind has gone to rest, but your body is still working. There is no rest. Only a dead man, his body rests. Until that time, there is no rest. Constantly this activity is going on. But then, why do we not feel that we are working constantly? Only when you are working, thinking, you feel. When you are sitting in an easy chair, you say, no, I am not working, I am resting. No, you are not resting. You are, because you are still a slave to your body. Your hunger will tell you, come on, get up and eat. Your body will tell you, you are tired, go and sleep. Sleeping is also a big, big activity. There is no rest here. Everybody has to work. 99% of mankind work like slaves, and the result is misery. Why? Because it is all selfish work. Work through freedom. Work through love. The word love is very difficult to understand. Love never comes until there is freedom. There is no true love possible in the slave. Swami Vivekananda very adroitly brings us to the concept of non-attachment. What is non-attachment? To work like a master. And what is it to work like a master? Work, you know, the word master brings, the master has so many slaves and he has taken a whip in his hands and he is making them work. No, sir, that's not the idea. The idea is work with love. Work, to work like a master means to work with perfect love. But don't we do love, work with love? When you go to office, you do love your work. When you come to your home, you love your wife, your children, your house, your car, and your dog, and everything. Is it not love? No, that's not love. Because your very happiness depends upon them. Suppose they are not there. Do you think, will you be happy? Other day I was seeing, you know, a documentary. One woman, she had a dog. And the dog had to be operated. And she was sitting outside with her husband or whatever, I don't know. And weeping her eyes out. What is going to happen to my darling? After all, it is a dog. What is there? But you know, she bestowed, she cannot, the dog is maybe quite happy without her. But she is not capable of being happy without her dog. We are all dependent. When we are dependent upon something, that is slavery. That's not love. We always identify love with a type of emotion. No, that's not love. That's an emotion. You feel, you know, pleasure. And say, I love ice cream. As in the Swami Bhaskarananda's cartoon, a wolf caught hold of a goose by the neck and, I love you the most in this world. And the goose was thinking, shall I also reply saying, I also love you? You know, there was a man walking in Ireland. At that time, there was IRA conflict was there. A lot of people were being killed. He was walking at night in Belfast. Suddenly, he found the butt of a gun behind his back. Are you a Catholic or are you a Protestant? And he had to think very quickly. So he said, no, I am a Jew. Immediately the man behind jumped with, boy, oh boy, am I the luckiest Arab in the whole world? What we call love is you provide pleasure for me. And the moment that stops, that pleasure comes, stops coming, that very moment, all our love not only vanishes, it will even turn the opposite. How many times husbands or wives kill each other? Even though, when they got married, how much they thought they were in love with each other. And yet, so many tragic incidents we hear, is it not? That's not love. Each one of us, we get some juice out of it's objectification. So long as we get some amount of juice or pleasure, then we think we love that. No, that's not love. Can you love without expecting anything? Can you be happy just at the happiness of the other one? That is true masterly way of living in this world. Swami Vivekananda's words are so beautiful. It now, after so many years, you know, psychologists, anthropologists, and statesmen, and businessmen, they are confirming what Swami Vivekananda had made statements 100 years back. And what Swami Vivekananda made is nothing new. Jesus Christ had made the same statement 2000 years back. Because that is the truth. Truth can only be one. It can only be repeated. You cannot change it. Here is Swami Vivekananda. With love, there is no painful reaction. Love only brings a reaction of bliss. If it doesn't, it is not love. It is mistaking something else for love. When you have succeeded in loving your husband, your wife, your children, the whole world, the universe, in such a manner that there is no reaction of pain or jealousy, no selfish feeling, then you are in a fit state to be unattached. Love means unattached, to be unattached. Love means to be a master. And that is the goal of Karma Yoga. How to be a master, how to love. These concepts, these two words seem to be in conflict with each other. I want to be unattached, detached, and I want to love at the same time. For us, love means I must be attached deeply. The more deeply attached I am, the more I feel that I am in love. The less I am in love, the more I am attached. No. The more the true love, the more is the non-attachment because of knowledge. Krishna says, look at me, Arjuna. If I stop from work for one moment, the whole universe will die. I have nothing to gain from work. I am the one Lord. But why do I work? Because I love the world. God is unattached because He loves. That real love makes us unattached. So, there are two tests by which we know whether we are working with detachment, with non-attachment, and with love. What is it? First, whatever work we do with love, with detachment, it only brings bliss. It has no painful reaction at all. And secondly, it does not make us, enslave us, it doesn't bring any bondage. Yes, highest pleasure, highest bliss, but it doesn't bind us. Perfect freedom will come. These are the two tests. There are two things which guide the conduct of men in the whole universe. Always this is the truth. There are two things, might and mercy. The exercise of might is invariably the exercise of selfishness. All men and women try to make the most of whatever power or advantage they have. But mercy is heaven itself. To be good, we have all to be merciful. Even justice and right should stand on mercy. Justice without mercy is cruelty. So how can we acquire this mercy? How can we be mighty and yet merciful, perfectly just and perfectly detached, love perfectly and yet be masters? How to do that? That is the goal of Karma Yoga. So there is a way in which this idea of mercy and selfless charity can be put into practice. That is, by looking upon work as worship, in case we believe in a personal God. There are two ways to practice Karma Yoga. One way is, be a master. You love, but be completely, perfectly unattached. Do not expect any results, but at the same time do what best you can do. That is a very hard way. Only one, perhaps like Lord Buddha, perhaps like Sri Ramakrishna, perhaps like Ramana Maharshi, perhaps like say, Swami Vivekananda, only they can do it. For majority of us, the rest of us, there is another way. What is that? That you worship, you convert work into worship. What is the idea? The idea is you are not doing anything to please the other person or other object. You are trying to do this work to please your Lord, your chosen deity, your God. If we keep this idea in mind, it will be wonderful. There is a beautiful book, The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. And in that he says, I would not lift a straw from the ground but for the love of God. What a marvelous statement. He says, if I do not feel that this is what I am lifting this straw for pleasing the Lord, then I would not do it. It's only if I feel that by this I am pleasing the Lord, then only I will do it. He had his ups and downs. He had to work at this idea for many, many years until it became such a habit he could never forget God. That is the idea of japa. In Hindus, you know, they always tell, do japa. That is the best spiritual practice. Usually by that people understand, you know, what does it mean? It means repeat the name of God. But repeating the name of God itself in the most perfect detached manner has become our habit. Means you don't feel anything. After some time you even forgot that you are repeating the name of God. Japa itself has become a kind of mechanical work. Somebody asked me, you know, I'm so busy. I cannot always go on taking the name of God. Can I hear devotional music by playing a cassette player? So I said, yes, you can do it. And will it bring me liberation? I said, I don't know whether it will bring you liberation, but certainly the cassette player will be liberated. The idea is, japa means the constantly that knowledge, I am doing everything for God. That is the idea which we have to remember, not the name of God. It doesn't matter which name of God you remember. But I am doing everything for the sake of God. I am living for the sake of God. I am breathing for the sake of God. There is a saying in English, some people live to eat and some people eat to live. So the ideal of a karma yogini is he lives to please the Lord. This idea of complete self-sacrifice is illustrated in the following story. There was a wonderful story. It's very briefly, the five Pandava brothers had conquered the Kauravas and they thought that they had committed a lot of sin, acquired a lot of sin by killing people. So they wanted to purify themselves. They perform a great sacrifice. And the sacrifice is, they have to give a lot of wealth in charity. Of course, the paradox is, to acquire so much of wealth so that they could give away, they go and conquer so many kings and get their wealth. It is like, you know, somebody going and robbing a bank so that they can donate to Vedanta Center. But in those days they considered it as, you know, as a legitimate thing to conquer other people, bring it but donate it. So tremendous festivities were going on. Thousands and thousands of people were being fed and given, being given gifts and sent away. And people started saying, we have never heard anybody performing such a wonderful sacrifice. And the Panchapandavas were very smug with satisfaction that they were doing their wonderful sacrifice nobody else had ever done before. So one day they were all sitting, kings and then ministers and important people in the council palace hall, and suddenly they found that a mongoose with its half body golden and the other half very normal, it entered, and there was just a place where some people were fed a few minutes before and there were some remains on the floor. This mongoose started rolling on that unclean place, and every now and then it was looking at itself. So everybody is watching, what is this strange creature doing like this? Of course, you know, in mythology, even animals can speak. So Yudhishthira asked the mongoose, who are you and what are you doing? Then the mongoose stood up and addressed, O king, you may consider yourself as the greatest performer of sacrifice like this, but it is absolutely worthless sacrifice. I had witnessed a sacrifice which alone can be called a true sacrifice. So once there was a famine, and for several years there was no water, food was very less, people were dying by droves, and there was a pious Brahmana family. One day, with great difficulty, he acquired a little bit of grains and gave it to his wife, and she cooked the food. When they were about to eat, suddenly a guest entered into their house. So the guest had to be considered as God and entertained. They welcomed him, and the Brahmana, being elderly, said, "Give my portion to this guest." And the guest ate it all and said, "Previously I had hope of living. Now by giving this little food you have killed me, because my hunger only had increased." So the wife had given her part, and his son had given her portion, and his daughter-in-law also had sacrificed. All the four people in the house gave their portions of the little food to this guest, and the guest was satisfied. He blessed them and went away. But those four people died on the spot because of starvation. So the mongoose was narrating. He said, "Shortly after that, I went to that place because I was also hungry. A few grains of leftovers were on the floor where the guest had eaten, and just such a small quantity. I rolled my body on that, and as soon as that leftovers touched my body, half of my body became golden. I understood this was the greatest sacrifice of life itself. Ever since that time, I have been, whenever I hear there were great sacrifices, I go there to test whether it is great sacrifice. So I heard about your sacrifice, I came to you, I rolled on this ground, nothing happened. This is nothing, this is just rubbish." This is one of the biggest stories, most beautiful stories in Mahabharata. The idea is, a person who is, it is not giving up food, a person who is giving up his very life, he knew that he is going to die if he doesn't eat. And even under those conditions, he was perfectly, happily willing to sacrifice what little they have so that the good Lord can be served. And that is the idea of Karma Yoga. Even to the point of death, you must be able to sacrifice yourself, not with groaning and mourning, but with the greatest satisfaction, contentment, because you are pleasing your Divine Lord, your God. If somebody can acquire that much of love, then he becomes a perfect Karma Yogi. Love always brings only bliss. However sacrificial it is, however hard it is, love always brings in its wake that sense of bliss, contentment, fulfillment. And only a spiritual person can truly love. And only a loving person can be spiritual. The whole idea is, religion is a joyous affair. It is an affair of love. It is an affair of bliss. Try to work. Try to live your life so that you can acquire that masterly way of doing everything, so that you can develop love, you can develop knowledge, self-knowledge, you can develop that bliss. That is our duty. So in this chapter, Swami Vivekananda says, what is duty? Duty is that which liberates us. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.